close. Are you there?
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm here.
Well, hi, everybody. Tricia Griffith here with what used to be called Web Sleuth Radio. Now it's Tricia's True Crime Radio. We have changed it. And just a reminder that Tricia's True Crime Radio is a totally separate entity from WebSleuth.com LLC and also from ForensForJustice.org. So basically what I'm saying is whatever I say or other people say, it's our responsibility and no one else's, okay? Hey, tonight we have a great show. If our guests show up, that's a good thing, okay? We do have Dr. Lillian Glass, the body language expert, scheduled to come on. She's very reliable, very dependable, and we can't find her. So Lisa B., our wonderful, wonderful Web Sleuth member, has agreed to come on first, so I'm kind of throwing her a bit of a curveball here. But let me tell you a little bit about Lisa B. and something called CAPER. Lisa B. was married to a man, very charming, very nice man. She was a single mother with a young daughter. I will let her fill in any details that she wants, but basically what she found out was that her husband, now her ex-husband, was sexually abusing, molesting her daughter. And he did it in the sneaky, horrible way that those predator pedophiles do, and that's by getting close to the people, you know, gaining their trust, and that's exactly what he did. Well, the good news is he was convicted. He pleaded not guilty. He was convicted, and after his conviction, he admitted his crime. Well, he was sentenced to, I don't know, a ton of years, and all of a sudden, Lisa B. realizes that he's up for parole. He's only served like 20% of his sentence, and he's up for parole. So Lisa B. came to Web Sleuth and said, what can we do? Well, we formed a forum called CAPER, and that is Citizens Against Pedophiles Early Release, or we just call it CAPER. And what Lisa B. did, let me tell you, Lisa B. has been working her behind off, getting documents ready and researching, making sure that this monster stays behind bars. Because there was a very good chance that on July 24th, the parole board could have said, you know what, you've done a lot of good in prison. Parole granted, you'll be out in 3 months. And then boom, he's out ready to pray again. So Lisa B. came to Web Sleuth, and all she asked us to do was for our members to write letters to the parole board. And that's what some of our members did. We are trying on Web Sleuth to make CAPER a very active forum. We want to find out about other pedophiles who are scheduled for this early release. Why they want to release a predator upon us again, I don't know. But they're all over the country, and it happens every day. And that's Lisa B.'s goal as well, is to get people behind the CAPER forum so we can write letters to these parole boards and keep these predators behind bars. Lisa B., welcome to Tricia's True Crime Radio.
Hi, good to talk to you.
Okay, listen, I know I've kind of thrown you a bit of a curveball here by getting you on first, but I know you can handle it because you've handled a lot tougher things. Why don't just give us just kind of a general, kind of an overview of the story leading up to when he was convicted. Just give us that overview, if you will, please.
Sure. When I met him, I had been divorced from my daughter's father for about a couple of years, and she was 7, 8 years old at the time, and he completely misrepresented everything about himself, including mm-hmm. real estate holdings, financial situation, vehicles that he owned, and he was able to conceal all that from me long enough to get me to marry him. And we were married for approximately 2 years, during which time his behavior was abominable. I had no idea that he was molesting my daughter, but I did know that, you know, by that time I had understood that he had deceived me about
right.
a number of other issues. We separated, we divorced, and a few years later my daughter started to act up. She was injuring herself. She was just turning into a wild child, and I wanted to get her into counseling as soon as I realized what was going on. And after about a year in counseling, 8 months, 10 months, she revealed accidentally to her psychiatrist that she had been molested by this man for approximately 2 years. She said it was roughly on an everyday basis. And
Let me stop you right there. Was looking back on it now with 20/20 hindsight, was there anything, any small little morsel of something that you were able to recognize that there was a problem? I'm going to step out on a limb here and say there wasn't, but you tell me.
Well, in hindsight, he used to make a joke in front of me that when she turned 18, he was going to divorce me and marry her.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was a joke. I never took it as anything more, but it may be part of what he was doing to manipulate her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find out till quite some time later.
Kimster, that's on, hold on one sec. Kimster, that's on the air, honey. Take it off the air. Okay, there. Kim, that's on the air. Kimster.
Hi, I'm not available at the moment, but if you leave your name and your telephone number with a brief message, I'll
okay.
be sure to get back.
All righty. There we go. Anyway,
okay.
Sorry about that.
Go
right ahead.
At any rate, about the time she started high school, I started to notice that she was acting strangely. She was turning into this sort of goth appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And by accident, I discovered that she'd been injuring herself and took her to counseling. And as I said, about 8 to 10 months later, accidentally, while talking to her psychiatrist, she just wanted to get in and get out of there. And she wasn't paying attention to what she was saying, and it slipped out. And I was called into the office, and the psychiatrist asked me, he told me he needed to tell me that my daughter had been molested.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that they had suspected all along, but she'd been denying. And the first question I had for her was, who was it? And, I wasn't terribly surprised to find out that it was Donnie. I was relieved that it wasn't her biological father.
Right.
After, talking with the psychiatrist for about 20 minutes, he asked how she wanted to proceed, and she indicated that she did not want to make a big deal out of it. She just wanted it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he indicated he wasn't going to report it, and we left his office. I took my daughter back to school for the day, and on the drive over, I asked her why she didn't want to pursue it, and in the course of the conversation, she changed her mind, and she decided that she did need to do something about this.
Yeah.
I immediately called the psychiatrist's office and told them to have him report what we had told him or what she had told him. As a mandatory reporter, I didn't want him to get into trouble by trying to do her a favor.
Right.
And since we had decided to report it, I wanted him to do so as well. I immediately called the county police and a psychologist, and, she and I were both just totally shaken up by the whole thing. And I don't think it had actually occurred to her, because when I asked her, I said, when they kept asking you why you didn't, why had you been molested, why did you keep saying no? And she says, I didn't think they were talking about that. And, I don't know what she thought they were talking about, but obviously, she just didn't connect it, and I had to die. We did call the police. Initially, they referred us to Department of Child Protective Services. There was an interview done with Warren and with myself, and there was a finding of child sexual abuse. And at that point, they passed the case on up to the county court. And the county court filed charges against him. The county police officer we've been dealing with, Detective Long, attempted on several occasions to contact Donnie, either at his home or at his work. And every time he went to either place, he was told that, he's just not here today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had provided a photo, so I asked Detective Long to take the photo with him the next time that he met with, or tried to contact this gentleman, and to ask, to compare the photograph to the person who was telling him that Donnie wasn't there. And the very next day, I got a call back from Detective Long saying, the guy who's been telling me all along that Donnie's not there was Donnie, you were right. So they interviewed him. They filed charges on the county level. And almost immediately, the state stepped in within about a month, and they filed state charges. The county charges were set aside, the Child Protective Services stuff was set aside, because the priority at this point was the
state
case.
Right.
We prepared for the case. We attempted to get all the documentation we could. Lauren had, in the meantime, revealed to several of her teachers, her principal, her school guidance counselor, and her school nurse what had been going on. Each of them approached me and asked if I was aware, and I said that I was, and they asked if it had been reported, and I said that it had, but I also asked that they report it as they are required to do, because the more reports, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And it come to find out, when we actually eventually went to court against him, which was approximately a year later due to the delays that his attorneys, perpetuated, we were the only ones there. The detective who had investigated it had moved on to another division. The Child Protective Services person that we'd spoken with had moved to Virginia. Her psychiatrist had never reported it. Neither had any of her teachers, the guidance counselors, the principal.
So you were on your own. You were on your own. You were
we
really
totally
on your
were.
Own.
We were lucky to have a wonderful state's attorney helping us with this. Unfortunately, his attorneys, they insisted on getting all sorts of personal information about my daughter, subpoenaing records from her MySpace and Facebook accounts. You know, at this point, she was a teenager, and she wasn't by any means the child she'd been at 8, and she was dealing with teenager issues, and they tried to sort of apply what she was saying currently to her as an 8-year-old and to make her seem as though she was not promiscuous, but, you know, that she was aware of what was going on, which, of course, she hadn't been at the time. They postponed the case again and again. We finally ended up going to trial. He waived the jury trial and agreed to be heard by a judge. And at that time, I wasn't aware the judge had only been on the bench for about a year. I discovered that only in the past few months. Great judge. Couldn't have been more fair. He had me on the stand. He had Lauren on the stand. Obviously, we were out of the courtroom when each other testified. And at the end of it all, he decided that Donnie was guilty of the crimes that he'd been accused of the majority of them. There were 15 charges, and I think he was found guilty of 7 or 8 of them. Because he had, he was employed at that time, his attorneys requested that he be allowed to return home and to, you know, spend 30 days on home detention while he continued to work so he could pay his bills. Well, what never came up was that as soon as he was convicted, his employer dismissed him. So basically, he just spent the next 30 days sitting at home on the couch watching television.
Oh, brother.
And he came in for the sentencing hearing, and the judge, he combined several of the charges, and he was it was indicated that because the crimes had occurred in 2000 to 2002, he shouldn't have been charged, Donnie should not have been charged under the statutes that were in effect in 2007. So everything had to be converted back to the 2002. And he sentenced Donnie to 15 years on each of 3 counts to be served consecutively and a 5-year sentence on another count that was to be served concurrently, a requirement that he register as a child sex offender when he was released. And, you know, we were fairly satisfied with that. Some of the charges were rolled together so that, you know, he, although he'd been found guilty of 7, there were only 4 actual sentences. We assumed he'd be in jail for 45 years, and at the time he was in his mid-40s, so we figured, you know, it's basically a life sentence.
Sure.
He was put into protective custody because apparently, you know, child sex offenders are victimized in prison. And, you know, that was fine with me because my intent was never to have him be abused, but to have him be incarcerated.
Right.
And that was all the judge intended. So, you know, I was satisfied with that. But then the judge proceeded to suspend 10 years of each of those 15-year sentences.
Oh, man.
15 years. And the other 5 was to be served concurrently. So he had a 15-year sentence, which, you know, my daughter was at the time 16 years old, and we figured by the time he got out, she'd be 30, 31, and probably finished college, moved to another state, maybe married with a different name, and having had years of counseling, be able to deal with the idea of him being out in the public. Well, almost immediately we got a notice asking whether we wanted his first parole hearing to be open or closed. This was the same year that the trial happened. He was sentenced in August, and by December we had a letter asking whether we wanted his parole hearing to be open or closed. And we said, of course we wanted it to be open. We wanted anybody who wanted to attend to be there.
Right.
And, you know, he had, you know, several friends and his mother appear as character witnesses. They'd never been to any of the sessions of the trial, but they came in to talk about what a great guy he was. And, you know, and he gave a big patriotic speech about how, you know, I believe in my country and I believe in America and I believe in our justice system.
Oh, brother.
Terrorists have been committed here today, yada, yada.
Hold on, Lisa, hold on. I just want to tell everybody, we're talking with Lisa B., one of our wonderful members on Web Sleuths, about her ex-husband who sexually abused her daughter, and how our new forum and the members, a new forum called CAPER, Citizens Against Pedophiles Early Release, helped keep this man behind bars and deny his parole. And Lisa B. is just kind of giving us the background. Okay, now where are we picking up from, Lisa?
Okay, well, he had been sentenced to 15 years. It was three consecutive five-year sentences and a five-year concurrent sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, we thought we had plenty of time before he'd be released. And lo and behold, after he'd served 25% of the sentence, he was eligible for parole, which meant that 3.5 years into his sentence, when my daughter was still a teenager, he was eligible for parole. And we were a little overwhelmed by the situation. She was by no means ready to handle it. She was still in counseling. She was seeing a psychologist, a psychiatrist. She was attending sessions with a special child sex abuse counselor. And she was getting better, but she had a ways to go. And by that point, she'd come to grips with the idea that this man was not going to stop molesting children. He had probably done it in the past because, according to her, it had started almost immediately upon her meeting him and had been almost a daily occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
I noted that he had previously dated mothers with daughters. And, you know, so we have suspicions that she was not the first victim. So
okay,
when it
so
came
let's,
time...
Let's fast forward, if we could, for just a moment. So he was sentenced. You found out he's only going to serve 25% of his actual sentence. That infuriated you, obviously.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And so what recourse? Did you have any recourse? I mean, what could you do?
Well, because we had requested an open parole hearing, we were allowed to come in, and Lauren or I, one or the other, was considered the victim, and the other was there as their support personnel, and the victim was allowed to make a statement. And
okay, now we're,
so
but this is the one, this is the latest parole hearing on the 24th?
This is July 24th, correct.
Okay, but let's back up a bit. You came to Web Sleuths, though, and this was your idea. This CAPER forum was your idea, and you came up with the name and everything. It's Citizens Against Pedophiles Early Release. And our goal on CAPER is to get other people like Lisa who need our help to keep these pedophiles behind bars. Now, Lisa, you and I talked specifically about the type of people we want to keep behind bars. There are people that are going to be registered sex offenders, you know, people that were 20-year-olds that had sex with a 17-year-old. We're not talking about that.
That's a whole different story.
Different thing.
We were talking about a man in his late 30s and a girl who is under 10 years old.
Exactly. Those are the people. Those are
the
scary, predator, sick, disgusting pigs that need to be kept behind bars. So we formed CAPER. Lisa did all the work. She went on the forum, got all the documents, showed everybody. You know, I'll be honest, Lisa, I was surprised at, we did have some great members write letters, but I thought we'd have hundreds, if not thousands. We only had about 30, right?
But that was plenty. I basically pulled together all the documents showing not only the social services case against him, but the county case and the state case. And I was able to provide all the documentation about his sentence and his incarceration and so forth. And because of that, Tricia obviously was willing to allow me to present that to some of the Web Sleuths members through the new forum, the CAPER forum, and to ask that anybody who sympathizes with us take a minute to either send an email or write a letter and let the parole commission know how they felt about this, whether or not they lived in our neighborhood, whether or not they even lived in our country. The potential for him to leave prison and move in next door to them was there.
And here's the thing, Lisa. I may interrupt for just a second. Here's the thing. The parole board is not used to getting any letters. So all of a sudden they start seeing letters come in. They're human. They don't want to look bad. They want to do the right thing. And they realize, hey, this guy, if we let him out, there's all these people here that have written us, and there's this website that has all these members that are watching this. We can't let them out, and that's our goal. You know, we're not trying to be unfair. We're not trying to be mean. We're trying to protect other little kids, for God's sakes. And so that's the thing. When they saw the support you had, you came in, you said you went there, and they just treated you beautifully, right?
Oh, it was amazing. We did, like I said, we presented the information to Web Sleuths and to a few people that we knew in the real world, and asked us if they had an opinion about it to write to the board. We offered them the documents that we had available and said, you review it for yourself, make your own decision, and, you know, decide whether or not this is something you feel comfortable backing. Mm-hmm. And when we went on the 24th to the parole hearing, we first were given a private guard who escorted us through the prison to the entire, you know, through the entire process. Mm-hmm. First, we were introduced to the warden and the assistant warden. You know, they shook our hands. We felt like VIPs. I mean, apparently, it's not common for victims to come in and pursue it. Once the person is convicted, that's it. They're done. Mm-hmm. And they were just happy to see us following up. And the parole board consisted of two gentlemen, and they met with us privately first and, you know, told us what they were trying to do and indicated that I must be really well connected because they had never in their lives seen 30 people write in to oppose parole for somebody.
And here's the thing, Lisa. Here's what you and I, if I can just speak mm-hmm. to our goal here. In addition to that, I send out press releases and contacted the local media, and I was really surprised that they didn't pick up on this as a human interest type case, but nobody did. Lisa, our goal together is to make this a big deal so that when Web Sleuth members of the CAPR Forum get behind a family to keep someone behind bars, that it is a big deal. And so your case was our stepping stone. Lisa, we're going to have to just kind of fast forward a little bit here because I have Dr. Glass on the phone. So anyway, he was denied parole, but he was denied. He is not allowed to reapply
for 3 more years.
But he did something that surprised you, which was he said something to your daughter.
Well, he apologized to her. He was not allowed to look at her. We were mm-hmm. outside the room, and he was to direct his view directly at the parole commission. She gave her statement. Then they asked me for a statement. I wasn't prepared. I thought she was the only one talking, but I threw a few words their way. And then they sent us out of the room and brought him in, and he explained that if he were to be paroled, he had a place to live. He would go back into sales. He'd like to volunteer with the elderly and with animals, which scared me a little because they're the most vulnerable and helpless members of our society. But, you know, he hadn't changed an awful lot. Mm-hmm. They asked us what we, you know, how we felt about it. We told them that we felt he needed to be kept longer. And we expected maybe they'd postpone it a year or maybe 2 years. And when they told us, or when they told him, that it would be 3 years before he's even allowed to apply again, we were just ecstatic. I mean, mm-hmm. we never expected that kind of result. But they said that not only do victims very rarely follow through after the conviction, but that to get the letters that they got from people all over the world, people who had been law enforcement officers, people who were, you know, psychiatric nurses, people who had been the parent of a victim or who had been a victim themselves, were, you know, explaining how this had affected them, they were just beside themselves. They just couldn't, there was no way they could have seen to let him go. And as he said, they did tell him at least 3 more years before he could be eligible to apply again. And he was, I'm sure, disappointed by the outcome, but he's really done nothing to rehabilitate himself.
No, and he won't. People like that don't. That they absolutely don't. Well, I am so delighted that Web Sleuth could help you and your daughter, and I hope she's healing, and she's such a tremendous young woman.
She's still in counseling, but you know, even the day before we went to the hearing, we got messages on the CAPR forum saying, you know, even if we can't be there physically, we are there with you in spirit. And we really felt like we walked in there with a team behind us.
And that's what we want to do.
It made it so much easier for us to feel like we were supported.
And so Lisa's kind of the de facto in charge person of the CAPR Forum. She's going to be really pushing it and helping us get other people there. So if anybody listening knows somebody that is a victim of, you know, a pedophile that is now behind bars and that person's coming up for parole, let us know. We'll get behind it. And Lisa can help you with this. And
I think it's important. I think it's important that you have the documentation so that it doesn't look like it's the result of a vindictive divorce or whatever.
Exactly.
If you've got the documentation to back it up, then people are going to back you up.
It's got to be.
And I think that may have been part of the problem with the local media, is they really weren't familiar with the case. It wasn't something that got a lot of publicity. He wasn't a school teacher or a coach. He was just a stepdad. And so they didn't know a lot about the case. And I think that's probably why it got so little attention. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, if we continue with this, if they continue to get press releases, soon it will be something that they will look into. And, you know, like I said, the support we got, even if nobody had written a letter, just the people saying, go for it, just made us feel like we had a chance. And the letters, you know, like I say, they were a major factor. We were told the two biggest factors were that we showed up and the number of letters that had been written.
That is so great.
And the fact that they came from psychiatric nurses and law enforcement professionals and victims and parents of victims and people who really understood what it was all about.
Exactly.
And, you know, like I said, that really worked for us, and we couldn't have expected a much better outcome. And we'll be back there in 3 years if he applies for parole again. We'll be there.
And we'll be right there with you, Lisa. Lisa B., thank you so much. We encourage everyone to go to websleuths.com/forums, look at the CAPER forum, and we will help as many people as we can. Lisa, thank you. We'll be in touch very, very soon, okay? Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Uh-huh. Okay, there you go. There, you see, it just takes a little. I always stress how much you can affect somebody by doing something good just by posting on a forum. You heard it right there from Lisa B. and her daughter. Just reading those messages of support meant so much to her. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful woman we've been waiting for, Dr. Lillian Glass. Thank you for holding, Dr. Glass. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure. So sorry I got tied up. I'm here for you.
That's, you know what? 24/7. You always are. I did not have one doubt that you would
absolutely
not be here.
Absolutely.
Okay, everybody, we have the world famous, world renowned Dr. Lillian Glass. Dr. Glass, give us your exact title and exactly what your specialty is, because I want to make sure that it's said correctly.
Okay, I'm Dr. Lillian Glass. I'm a behavioral analyst, and my specialty is in body language and communication analysis.
Exactly. And boy, do you know your stuff. And we're going to talk about Drew Peterson tonight. And at the end of our conversation, Dr. Glass, do you still do private sessions with people and such like that? You were offering it on your website a while ago.
Yeah, it depends, you know, what it is. As I said, I've just gotten so tied up in doing a lot of stuff in the legal field where I analyze surveillance tapes as well as deposition tapes and work with attorneys, and I'm doing a lot of work with law enforcement. I just lectured at the FBI last month, and so I'm doing a lot of different things. But it depends on what the situation is.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about that at the very end here, but let's get to the Drew Peterson case. You know, and from a layman's viewpoint, I mean, the only thing I can say is what a scumbag. I wish I could be more eloquent and more professional, but I'm sorry. The guy is the biggest scumbag in the world. Now, let's go back, okay? First of all, Drew Peterson's on trial for the murder of his third wife, Kathleen Savio. His fourth wife, Stacy Peterson, is missing. Drew Peterson, incredibly arrogant. If you've seen him on TV, he just makes you want to hurl, basically. You actually saw him, but give us that story when you were at CNN.
It was
fascinating.
It was so interesting. I was at CNN, and I was ready to do a show. And as I'm walking straight forward towards the makeup room, there was a gentleman there, and he was standing with his back towards me. But he was at I saw the back of his head and his body, and he was moving around. And I looked at him, and something just didn't feel right. It was just like a creepy feeling. I just went, oh, what a weird person. This was during the days where Larry King still had his show, so he had a lot of people on his show. And so as I observed him, there was like a strange sensation that I had. It was kind of like, something's creepy about that guy. And then he turned around, and it was Drew Peterson. And I was like, oh my God, man. Boy, my instincts sure were working.
And doesn't that say something to our instincts? I mean, that's the only word we have for it. I'm sure that someday science will zero in on that, and it'll be some scientific thing. But right now, it's our instinct, and you are in that energy from him made you realize.
Mm-hmm.
that
it was interesting,
not good.
You know, because I—that's a great statement that you just had said about instincts. Because I was wondering, what was it that created such a negative reaction? Maybe it was the stance that he had. Maybe it was his body language. Maybe it was the way, the kind of swagger that he had as he was kind of walking in the wait in the makeup room. Maybe it was something that it just wasn't right. Maybe it's the way his shoulders were. The bottom line is it didn't feel right. Something was wrong, mm-hmm. and there it was. So it was amusing to me.
Okay, let's fast forward. You've obviously observed him quite a bit, as we all have. What would you tell investigators about him that would help them understand him more? Drew Peterson.
Well, I would say, for one thing, you saw many signals of deception. If you analyzed his interviews on the Today Show, if you analyzed his interviews on the Larry King Show, you would see so many multiple tells of deception. You mm-hmm. would see so many eye blinks and too much talking. He described things way too much in detail. The arrogance. The kind of shirking back, kind of that, how dare you question mm-hmm. me, type entitlement. You know, there's a lot of personality issues, but I would have the investigators go back and study him in terms of his body language and then what he says in regard to the questions. So when he says something, watch the analysis, watch the body language analysis, and then use that information in the courtroom when you're re-asking the same question and go a little further or asking people that
give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, I really, at this point, I don't remember because I mm-hmm. had studied it quite extensively before I had gone on the air to analyze his body language specifically for like the Today Show or Meryl Larry King Show. But at this point, from what I recall, I just remember that when he was talking about things in general, he would just go on and on and on about things. And there were just like certain things that I would look at. So it needs kind of a micro study at this point since the trial is going on.
Understood. That is that would be so interesting. I would love for you to sit down and talk with him and be able to watch him answer those questions. I would pay money to see that because, boy, I
would rather not sit down with him. I'd like to watch him on video.
Or have somebody else sit down with him and do that.
The less...
you're absolutely right.
Communication. I mean, this is a fellow who is just so full of himself. Mm-hmm. That's really what's turned people off. And he felt so sure that there would be a mistrial. He felt so sure he was going to get away with it. And his attorney was blustering Joel Brodsky just the same way, and they were both saying, oh, there's no way. And now they're finding, hey, wait a minute, this is backfiring. Uh-oh. So I wonder if he's smiling and laughing. When we saw him that first day walking into the courtroom, it was atrocious. He was laughing. He was looking up. He was joking. And then you see the officers that were next to him, and they're not laughing. They're just escorting him. There's nothing funny about this. But he's thinking this is a big joke, and he's going to be out in a few minutes, and he's telling jokes, and he's having a good time, and he's just full of himself and thrilled as can be because he knows he's going to be walking the streets doing some more TV shows, radio shows. He's going to be getting a book deal, saying how wrongly he was convicted. He's going to have all kinds of women chasing him, so he thinks. And little does he know that he may be never seeing the light of day.
Well, and here's the thing, Dr. Glass. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, and we're talking about the Drew Peterson case. Dr. Glass is probably the top-notch, absolute best in her field in body language, among many other things. But Dr. Glass, what if he gets off? What if it's another Casey Anthony situation and they find him not guilty? He'll just be insufferable, won't he?
Oh, my God. If he gets off... Well, he's going to write a book. There's going to be a movie. There's going to be,
just
we
like
won't
you said.
Be hearing enough about him. And he's going to be on everybody's show saying everybody did him wrong. And there's going to be some lawsuits for certain people that have said that he was guilty. All kinds of things. All kinds of things that you can't even imagine.
You know, the thing I see happening, if he is, God forbid, found not guilty, or if there is a mistrial and they can't retry him again, I see him, messing up a la O.J. Simpson, doing something really stupid and him ending up in jail anyway, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, again, this is a guy who's a complete control freak. And when you look at why these women were allegedly murdered, we have to say allegedly a million
times.
You know, you look at the fact that he maybe couldn't control them anymore. Maybe they outgrew him, or maybe they were sick of him, or maybe they finally got who they married.
I think that was all of that. Absolutely.
You know, all of that, because you don't often know, especially if you're young and naive and somebody's sweeping you off your feet. And he's one thing that's very eerie about him. It's very seductive at the same time to certain women. He's very monotone and very cool-tempered and very, very easygoing. And so all of a sudden, you think someone like that can lure you in. And then all of a sudden, you see him snap. And you saw that snapping behavior when he was yelling at the journalists, and he was carrying on early on when there were accusations and things of that nature. But this is all about the legal systems. We have to see how it operates and what happens and what the jury says and what they do. And, you know, we certainly learned our lesson about American justice during the Casey Anthony case.
Exactly. And that's the thing, Dr. Glass, and I'm sure you see this a lot. Juries today, it's hard just on circumstantial evidence, and it's easy.
Well, it's hard, you know, I'll tell you something. It's hard on any level with any jury, and I do jury selection. In fact,
Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things I do is I help pick juries. I help attorneys figure out which is the best person for the jury. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, your hands are tied in many cases, because even though you may want someone, the other side may say, well, wait a minute, I don't want that person. So then it's like, or they go in a certain order, and different states do it different ways. And I'll tell you, you really never know about the justice system. I had a situation several years ago where I, thank goodness it worked out in my favor, but I had written a book in 1997 called Toxic People that was a bestseller, and it's published all over the world.
Great
and some
book.
Woman,
yeah, you should pick it up. Great book. Fantastic.
Yes,
anyway,
it
go
is
ahead.
Wonderful. But pick it up by Dr. Lillian Glass, because there was a lady, I shouldn't say lady, I say that with quotes. Her name was Marsha Petry Sue, and she had the audacity to call her book Toxic People as well. And she took several of my book's ideas and put it all together, but she messed up in one area. So she didn't do anything. She didn't copy that per se. So she didn't commit copyright infringement, but she did commit copyright infringement on another book that she included in the Toxic People book, my book, He Says, She Says. And believe it or not, I even picked the jury. I was helping the attorney pick the jury. Yes, so I picked my own jury. And thank God I won the case. But I was, you know, nervous during the trial. I wondered, oh my goodness, you know, will they see it? Will they get it? You know, I used all of my techniques that I teach people. And I will tell you, but it was frightening. Thank goodness justice was served, and she lost, and now she's also involved in a trademark infringement case. But this is a very disturbing situation. Thank God I prevailed. But the key is about juries. You never know. You never know.
Well, let's say, God forbid, you're working for Drew Peterson's defense team.
I wouldn't do that.
I know you wouldn't.
No, but let me just say something. In my life, one of the things that I really believe is in integrity, and I walk the walk and I talk the talk. And so the bottom line is I am approached by numerous people to do cases, to analyze certain things. I have to back off when I don't believe in a person. I have to go the other way. The money's not important. What's important is how do I feel about the person and what can I do for them to help them out. But I could never, for example, work on, a Casey Anthony trial or somebody that I personally had issues with. I even had to drop a case that was for a drug company, and I believed that they were hurting people. And, you know, it was a lot of money, but I said, no, I have to turn it down because, to me, I can't feel good about picking a jury that may save this company.
And this is why we love you, Dr. Lillian
Thank
Glass.
You,
you do
Thank
have
you.
Integrity.
That's how I live.
Well,
I
let's
do.
Then,
That's how
then
I
let's
live.
Do the flip side. Let's do the flip side. Let's say you're working for the prosecution.
Right.
And you're doing a Drew Peterson case.
Right.
You take Drew Peterson case. Yeah. What do you look for? I mean, what does somebody twitch and you think, okay,
oh,
they
yeah.
I can't even imagine how you start.
I look for micro movements and then I give notes. And then I'll say, well, ask this again, dig deeper, ask him about this, go deeper, just keep, you know, hammering him about this, go look at this, looking at the witnesses, what they're saying. So when I see a signal, then I'll have them approach a question a little differently. And, you know, as I said, it really is about looking at the nuances and also statement analysis. That's something I really do with communication. That's my background, and it really has worked so well. It's not just the body language. You know, there's, like you said, thank you so much for your compliment saying that I am foremost in my field. But I spent 30 years, you know, becoming the number one person in this field. And I come from a background of communication and psychology, and I've studied it, and I've paid my dues, and I've done research, whereas a lot of people, they get out there, and they go, oh, I'm a body language expert. You know, I studied it in a course. Well, guess what? It takes a lot more, because there's a lot of nuances and relating it to psychology. Like, why would a person write this, or why would they say that, and what is the motivation? So you've got to have so much background to analyze why and how and what a person does when they behave a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And so on a statement analysis,
yes.
What is that? I mean, somebody...
Like, for example, I would watch what they say, and or let's say I would read what they say if they've written something, or listen so carefully to what they say. Do they say I a lot? Do they stumble all the time? Do they, you know, what are they doing? What are they saying? Are they making faux pas all the time? You know, we saw this tremendously with in the Casey Anthony case with the mother, Cindy, and we saw her constantly calling Casey Kaylee, Casey, and people would think, oh, that's just a mistake because the names are so similar. No, she collapsed that into being her daughter, and that's really what kind of went on when you look at the psychology. So it's so fascinating when you understand the nuances, and when you're looking at Drew Peterson, getting back to him, you see a lot of behavior that may very well, again, be sociopathic. I hesitate saying that because I was convinced, based on studying the HARE, H-A-R-E, sociopathy scale when I was analyzing, going back to Casey Anthony case, I was convinced she was a sociopath. But when... According to Jose Baez, who had two, in his book, he had two separate independent psychiatrists and psychologists doing an analysis and did not find that. So I thought that was very odd.
Well, I'm sorry. I just don't trust Jose Baez. I'm not saying he's lying. I'm just wondering.
Well, you may be very right. But
something funky.
I thought, is that right? You know,
yeah.
Very, very odd. But again, so I don't know. Again, there is a test that one would do for sociopathy. So, you know, I can't really, you know, say for sure. But it seems to me he's showing a lot of signs of it. Certainly a lot of signs of narcissism. A jury's going to hate him. And I'll tell you what's going to happen now. Now that we're finding that he's not getting a mistrial, you know, he was all Mr. Cock of the Rock. He was real... You know, hey, I'm getting off. I've already planning, you know, my next meal and going to Hollywood and the whole deal. I'm going to meet Rob Lowe, who starred in my movie. Oh, it's going to be great. He's already got this in his head. And now it's like, hey, buddy, you're going to have to spend trial. Now, a part of his narcissism is thinking, you know what? I'm going to beat this. This is going to be no problem whatsoever. I'm going to, you know, the jury's going to love me because everybody loves me. But what he does, and, you know, he's hidden behind the badge of an officer, a police officer. So he's hidden behind the badge of fear. And a lot of people that are in law enforcement, unfortunately, are not, you know, people that have a lot of self-worth and self-esteem. And so I'm not saying all of them, but there are some people that don't. And as a result, you will see a lot of them hiding behind the badge.
Right.
Being the person that they are, so anyway, you're seeing him do this, and so now you watch him, and as you will observe him, and I wish there was a camera in the court, but there isn't. I'm sure he'll be looking at every juror, trying to, you know, get them to like him, so to speak. He'll be, you know, seeing if they're reacting. Well, jurors are told do not look at the or do not react to the person on trial. Be very objective. So again, he's going to have a hard time. So he's not going to get a lot of feedback. Mm-hmm. He's probably getting different feedback from his attorney. At first, his attorney was real as cocky and rocky
yes,
as he was.
Right.
Joe Brodsky. But now he's calmed down a little bit. He's gotten a reality check, like, whoa, I have mm-hmm. to really try this? Oh, my gosh.
What
I'm
am I
going to
do?
Mm-hmm. So what am I going to do? He's a mess. So I think you're going to see this guy, Peterson, trying to make the jury like him in a way. He's going to kind of be all cocky and try to, you know, do his little smile and looking and things of that nature. And then you're going to see it backfire because they're going to hate him.
Oh, yeah. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, definitely the number one person in her field, body language and communication expert, in addition to best-selling author. And we're discussing the Drew Peterson case and kind of going into Drew Peterson's body language and what's going on around him. You know what's frightening, Dr. Glass, is he's been able to attract women, beautiful women.
Mm-hmm.
Would it surprise you to find out that there was a woman on the jury, and I hate to say this about women because it really upsets me,
mm-hmm.
but somebody that might think, wow, I kind of like him because I'm attracted to him.
Oh, that happens all the time. Look what
yeah.
happened in the in just the recent trial with John Edwards. There was alleged
exactly.
flirting going on.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
come on, back and forth. Kind of a similar personality type
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, feeling all entitled and all that about themselves.
Exactly. So what
yeah,
you,
I think
mean,
there could be some, and that's why it's so important to pick a jury, to find out all about them. Are they married? Are they happily married? What's going on? You know, da 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 da. And you're going to see with that is possible. But then when you hear all of the details, that's going to kind of be a turnoff. When you see a dead person in a bathtub with no water and no, you know, all the evidence that to me allegedly looks like it's against him,
mm-hmm.
That may turn the person off completely.
We would hope.
It's going to be real hard to.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, again, he's. Again, you don't know. Did the jury see him before? Did they, you know, are they completely oblivious to this whole case? So you have to know who the jury is.
Let's talk about that for just a moment. Okay, so let's say we have, you know, we have this guy, we have Drew Peterson, who thinks he is, you know, the king of all kings and the coolest guy on the planet. And he has a little bit to back it up because he has had beautiful women fall in love with him and fight over him and want him. So what would you look for in, let's say, a young woman who, you know, somebody that Drew Peterson would absolutely be attracted to?
That he would be attracted to him?
That he would be attracted to. Let's say there's a young woman, 22 years old, really cute. But,
let me tell
I mean,
you something. He would be attractive to anybody. There was a makeup artist over at CNN who's not very attractive, I have to say. She's tattooed from head to toe. And there's nothing wrong with tattoos, but she's, you know, Yakuza tattoos all over
right.
her body. You know, glasses, frizzy hair. Not you know, again, not to put her down with how a person looks, but she's not the most attractive person, if
mm-hmm.
you know, heir to other people. And he was coming on to her, allegedly.
Jeez.
You know,
okay.
so when, you know, she was doing his makeup. So I think he has this kind of seductive personality that he kind of takes a shot at everybody.
See what'll
respond to him. Yeah.
Exactly. So, okay, let me flip that again. So let's say you have a young woman up there or even maybe an older woman, and what would you look for? Would you look for somebody who's in, you want to make sure that they wouldn't fall for Drew Peterson's crap and flirting and wouldn't become attracted to him or develop a little, you know, crush on him. What would you look for? How would you prevent
You would do that in the question phase. You know, you would ask how many of you have been with men that have been powerful men? How many men like police officers? How many people here in this room, you know, have had a relationship with somebody in law enforcement or somebody in a powerful position.
So
you know,
with
that has an impact.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment. Those questions, if they answered yes, would you automatically eliminate them? Because, you know, I think guys in law enforcement are cute.
I haven't been with anybody powerful, but
but I mean that shouldn't. I wouldn't think.
No, but then you look deeper. Then you have a subset. Then you ask.
Okay, so
more
let's
questions.
Go deeper. So what would the other? How would you weed this person out? Let's say there's somebody up there, very intelligent, very smart, but
you know,
you're
what
find
do you think
out,
of? Law enforcement, do you think you can be easily seduced? Do you think you could be easily seduced? Have you ever met somebody and you've just been attracted to them by their flirting with you? And have people turned out to be who you thought they were or they thought they weren't? Have you ever been abused? You know, these type of things.
But
so you ask it's a series of questions. You know, it's hard to say because you can't like, okay, anybody that answers this, I'm going to let go of them. No, there's a lot of subtle things, and then you have to figure out how they're reacting to it and what they're doing. I mean, I did a case once where it was a serious, serious case of a fellow who was accused falsely, I should say, of a sexual, like a sexual predator, and he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was one of these cases where the ex-wife was jealous, the whole,
right.
You know, issues. And the evidence didn't support it. But when I was in that that room where they were picking the jury, and I will tell you, as soon as they found out it was a sexual predator case, most mm-hmm. people were in there were crying. And you're seeing grown men crying. You're seeing people, you know, that have taken this so personally. Picking that jury was almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most difficult experiences. So it's tough. It is tough to do this kind of jury picking and asking questions. And even if you ask and, you know, certain things happen. So anyway, this one person that we thought, okay, this is good. She seems like she could be a fair person. The second she was chosen, she starts crying before she even got to the jury box.
Man.
And we're going, oh, this is a dead man walking. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, you never know.
And that's just it. You're absolutely right. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass. Dr. Glass is definitely, by far, the top in her field of body language and a communication expert. And we are talking about the Drew Peterson case and Drew Peterson in general, but we're off topic just a bit because I find this just fascinating. What is your most interesting case you've ever worked on, like in any sense of the word interesting? What pops into your mind first?
Oh, I tell you, one I just did I'm so proud of. Oh, I'm just tickled.
Let's hear about it.
This is a case where there was and this great attorney, and you should interview him for your show. I just think the world of him. His name is James Murray, and he's out of Oklahoma. Great attorney, and he sought out my services. And I was given the deposition, and it was basically this is another sexual kind of harassment case of a coach, a women's basketball coach that was accused of, you know, sexually molesting these
mm-hmm.
girls. And it was really nothing of the sort. It was one girl wanted to be liked and popular, and she told another girl, made up a story, and it got all over the school. And then it's kind of like a witch hunt type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just based on the deposition, going through everything, the inconsistencies and the brilliance of James Murray, it worked out. And he, you know, he was not, you know, convicted of everything
mm-hmm.
worked in his favor. And you can see that the other hand, he could have been spending the rest of his life in prison for something he didn't do. And he didn't have the patterns. He wasn't somebody who groomed children. He didn't do anything. He's just a real nice Southern guy who, you know, went out of his way for kids. You know, one of the girls said he exposed himself on the bus. Well, it was a freezing day. It'd be really unusual for somebody
right.
to expose himself. Then her body language, this was really intriguing. When she got off the bus, she didn't have the body language of someone that had just been exposed. Someone who exposed themselves. So
you had a video of her getting off the bus.
Yes. And there was no way about it, no question about it.
I'm sorry, keep going. I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, and, you know, and you just saw her. You know, she's talking on her cell phone. She's laughing. She's looking around. She's, you know, that's not what someone would do. You
mm-hmm.
know, her posture was straight. She's like, like nothing happened. So everything, and then, you know, somebody else made up a story that was similar to the first person's story, but that had certain things missing, and it was impossible if he had done certain things. So, you know, but that was a great case because it turned out so beautifully, and mm-hmm. justice was served, and I was so proud and honored that I could use my services and to aid the attorney to help this happen.
Well, let me ask you, and again, we're getting way off topic here, but I just find it so interesting, and it is my show, so there,
yes,
we're going to get off topic. Yes, it is.
About
this case that you just referred to, Dr. Lillian Glass, why did these people make this up about this coach?
Young girl, she wanted to be popular. She wanted to be accepted. Again, she wanted to be liked, and so, you know, a lot of times they have home problems, and they mm-hmm. collapse certain things that a teacher said or did, or maybe she had a problem that she wasn't going to be on the team, and the coach gave her a hard time or whatever,
mm-hmm.
so she got back at him, you know, and backfired, thank goodness,
how many people
picked it apart.
Can't afford a good attorney, and they're accused of this. We could go on and on.
And there are people that can't afford a good. You know, I've had another case that I mentioned earlier. That was also a case where a disgruntled wife. She said to him, "You know, if I can't have mm-hmm. you, no one will." And she made up these things and got her little daughter behind it. And there was no way these things could have happened when you really think about it. And because normally I don't like to take on sexual predator cases, especially if there's any inkling of guilt or anything of that nature,
mm-hmm.
But if I'm, you know, convinced, I'll help fight for it.
Good.
But in terms of justice, but on the mm-hmm. I interviewed him and talked to him, and there, you know, it just, he didn't fit any of the profiles that we see of child
mm-hmm.
predators. And again, the little girl, here was her testimony on the stand. I don't remember. I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh,
and she
dear.
Didn't say, and guess what? He's doing 3 life sentences now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
and you're, and you're convinced
because it just didn't make sense. And mm-hmm. again, there was a lot of things that you know, were involved in the trial. Just from my observation, I don't think, I think the jury was, again, the woman starts crying before she gets into the jury box. So
mm-hmm.
she had an agenda. And again, it was, there were just things there with the trial that I think that, she could have been done differently. But again, sometimes justice is served and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to realize, like Casey Anthony case, that's another case. In my humble opinion,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if justice was served. The mother should certainly be behind bars for what she did and her lies.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know why she's not there, Cindy.
I don't either. I don't either.
You know, I have no clue. And I think they just all wanted to be done with it. But
mm-hmm.
Casey, I don't know if Drew Peterson will mess up in the future because he's smarter than the average bear in a lot of ways. I mean, he's more clever. He's
mm-hmm.
He's been a cop. You can't be stupid to be a cop.
He's
sharp, you know, and he's manipulated it pretty well. And so I don't know. He may find somebody and live happily ever after. You never know. You know, we did see it with the Casey Anthony case. She probably will mess up down the road.
Yeah.
Somewhere, somehow, we will hear about her.
There is no doubt that Casey Anthony will be back in our lives, and I predict sooner rather than later. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, and we're talking, now we'll get back to the Drew Peterson case.
Yay.
It was not a good week for the prosecution. It didn't look good for them. Now it's looking a little bit better. How closely are you following the case, Dr. Glass?
Last I got it was the mistrials, you know, that they did not get a mistrial.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I got it. And so I don't know how it's looking better for them, how it can look better. But
here's the deal. There wasn't a mistrial, and they're able now to bring in some testimony that Kathleen's sister talked about concerning the threats that Drew made to Kathleen, who passed along to their sister. The defense brought it up and brought it out, and apparently because the defense brought it up, it has to be allowed. So it's we'll know a little bit more about this on Monday when it resumes.
Oh, right.
But it's looking just a little titch better for them.
Yeah, but even if it is a titch, just wait till the prosecution gets the hold of it. It's, again, how do you respond to the questions that the prosecution will ask, or how do you deal with it as a whole? How does the jury relate to you? So,
right.
Again, there's so many factors involved that people don't realize. You know, one of the things that I kept saying, and I hope to keep going back to Casey Anthony, but it's everybody saw it, so it's such a visual for us and such a learning experience.
Yes.
You know, I kept saying how important the jury was, how important jury selection was. And people were saying, oh, you know, it's not that important, you know, it's just really, they'll see right through it. And then we saw how important jury selection is. And so if we have the right jury with the Drew Peterson case, we will do great. And if not, it won't happen.
Exactly. We do have a question from our chat room. What do you, Dr. Glass, what do you think Drew will do? How will he deal with the possibility, if he's found guilty, how will he deal with that?
Oh, he'll be going on appeals. So he's going to have the vision that he's going to get out of it eventually. He's not going to be committing suicide or trying to do anything wrong, because he knows he's going to get out. He's just above the system, and he just had a bad lawyer. So he'll probably file Brodsky and get someone else and, you know, blame it on someone else and try to figure it out. And he does a lot behind bars. So he'll, you know, he's been on Twitter. He's done all kinds of shows.
I was going to say, he's been on radio shows behind
bars.
I've never heard of that.
All kinds of obnoxious things. So that's what I mean. He knows how to manipulate the system. He knows his rights. I mean, he's had to read people their rights for his whole life, so he knows the system, being a cop. And so the bottom line is, he's going to try to do it. And then if it fails again, he's going to probably deal with his fate and try to be cock of the rock in prison, try to be the cool guy there so he won't get killed.
Exactly. And so let's do a little fantasy role playing here. Let's say they say guilty on all charges. One person in our chat room is saying he'll just sit there and grin. Another person thinks that he may start cursing. What do you think?
Oh, I think he'll sit there and grin, because he'll think he'll get off the next time.
Yep, I think you're right.
And then he'll
go,
you know, that's no big deal. And then he'll just keep trying and trying, and, you know, he'll be from prison, you know, if he's given those privileges, he'll be on talk shows, and, you know, they'll be coming to prison to interview him, and he'll enjoy that. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be people out there, as there usually are, women with the lowest of the lowest self-esteem, that will write him and try to set up a friendship and maybe even marry him behind bars. You never know.
I can
maybe
see him marrying
behind bars.
He'll
go to a prison that they have conjugal visits. I mean, who knows? But whatever the case is, you know, he's not going to go away peacefully.
No. And I can see, I would guarantee you he's already getting love letters from women who are infatuated with him, no question.
Well, that's why he thinks he's all that. And again, there's always somebody. I mean, when you look at the Night Stalker and all these people of the most vile crimes where they gouge out someone's eyes and do horrible things with it, and yet they have people that marry them in prison.
I don't get it.
There are some people, the fellow that killed their parents, the Menendez brothers, I think they've been married, if I'm not mistaken, one was married a couple times.
Yeah, I can barely get a date, let alone, I mean, you know, and these guys end up getting married in prison. Maybe that's what I need to do,
something?
Go to prison.
Oh, no, God forbid, don't say that.
I won't say that, God.
It doesn't work with women, by the way.
You're
no,
right,
it
doesn't.
And
it
women,
doesn't. And
you know, they'll leave you behind and then some.
And that's it. And besides, I'm much happier not being married. Believe me, that's a whole other radio show. Okay. So, Dr. Glass, we're going to wrap it up here because I know you've got to get going, and I appreciate the time that you've spent with us.
Tell us about
your website. I just tried to go on it, and I think we crashed
it. Right now it's being redone. There's two websites. It's www.lilianglass.com without the doctor.
And
on that website, you can, if you want to have your pictures analyzed of you and your loved ones or family members, I can do that. For you. And
you
that's
can.
Kind of a
that's
fun
great.
Thing that I do. Yeah, and I tell you, or you send me tapes, I'll tell you what your little personality is based on what I think. So
that's what I wanted to ask you about. So people can come to you with just kind of a little thing here that they want analyzed, and you're able to do that.
Go online. Yeah, send me. It tells you how to do it exactly. www.lilianglass.com. And then you can definitely do anything, you know, you want. If you if you send, as I said, a video or pictures of you and your kids, you want to know what your relationship is. If you want to know what your relationship is with your man, what he really thinks about you, send me a couple pictures. You know, I can tell a lot just based on photographs.
Oh,
and based
wonderful.
On video. So it's a lot of fun, and it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
And you can just go online and do it. And then there's also a couple books I'm having. I have a new book that I wrote with an FBI agent called The Body Language of Terrorists. So that's kind of a thing.
Ooh, that sounds
online.
Good.
And then I have a brand new book coming out in October that I'm so excited about because it gives away all my secrets, and it's called The Body Language Advantage. And it tells you everything you want to know. So if you want to know as much as I do, you got to read that book.
Oh, I definitely
You can
do,
also pre-order it. You can go on Amazon and pre-order it. And then I have the other website, which is drlillianglass.com, which mm-hmm. will be up in a few minutes.
Okay, great. Oh, and that's the thing, too. I'm afraid that if I got that book, then I'd meet somebody and I'd just sit there and stare at them like a crazy person, analyzing
every
twitch and
everything.
No, you wouldn't.
What would happen is you wouldn't. What you would do is you'd learn how to deal with it. So if you said something that he didn't like, you would kind of get it, and then you would explore that a little further. You could tell if he's lying, if he was telling you, you know, that he didn't have a wife. You could certainly find out if he did or he didn't just based on reading that book and knowing some of the signals to look at.
That's wonderful. The book comes out in October. You can pre-order it.
You can pre-order it right now on Amazon. It's called The Body Language Advantage by Dr. Lillian Glass. And I'm telling you, I've written 17 books, mm-hmm. and except for Toxic People, which is a bestseller that I'm so proud of. And I'm proud of all the books, but that
right.
the bestseller. This book I am beyond proud of because it tells – it is. I really gave it all away.
Oh,
and
I love
it. Proud to do it. I didn't want to hide, hold back, you know, play any games. It's all there for you, and it's written in a way that you can understand. It's a lot of pictures in it, big, beautiful color pictures, so you can actually see what people are doing, what you're doing, and tells about personality types. You're going to love it.
Oh, I'm going to pre-order it as soon as we get offline here. Dr. Glass, we do have one question from Kimster, our executive
sure.
producer who handles
sure.
everything. Kimster, sure. what is your question, my darling?
Well, actually, this came all the way from Australia, from Wonder Llama, so I had mm-hmm. to ask it.
Okay.
And he was very curious. Dr. Glass, when you're on break or at lunch, do you use your talent of reading body language of people? That, you know, a lot of us are people watchers. Do you do that with your talent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, my friends and family, they love hanging out with me because I'll tell them all these little stories. Like, we'll be out to dinner. I'll say, see that couple? They hate each other. Look at that guy. Look, he can't stand her. He can't wait till she leaves the table. Oh, he's going to change. Look at it. He's going to be so relieved when she goes to the bathroom. And they just love it, you know. And then I'll tell them all kinds of, you know, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun to hang out with me.
You know what I was going to say? That's what you should do is charge people to take you to dinner, and then you can sit there and watch people, and you can just fill them in on everything. I'd pay you.
Like a TV show, doesn't it?
It does. It sounds like a reality show. That's
Maybe
perfect.
I should have that. Maybe that'll
there you
happen.
Go. Kimster, thank you so much. And Dr. Lillian Glass, give us the two websites one more time, please.
Okay, it's Lillian Glass, LillianGlass.com. That's the one you should really go to because that's the one that you can really learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And then just go to Amazon. The other one's DrLillianGlass.com with the DR, no period. And then you can go to Amazon and get that book. And again, I hate to be the kind of person, buy this book. But this book you really should have in your library because it's like a Bible that for body language, and once you get it, and it's easy, you know, some of these body language books that are out there, you don't get it, you don't follow them, mm-hmm. or they don't make sense, or they're based on other people's research that are watered down, but this is a real deal. This is based on research that I've done, I've studied for 30 years, and it can make a major difference.
Wonderful. The Body Language Advantage, Dr. Lillian Glass. As always, a tremendous pleasure.
And keep up the good work. I just love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
You're a wonderful person.
I'll tell you what, it's everybody working behind the scenes like crazy,
yes.
doing the hard stuff.
They're
great,
great group, great people.
So, thank you, Dr. Glass. You take care
thank
and
you.
Have a great night, okay?
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Kimster, wow, that was great, wasn't it?
Oh, I always love having Dr. Glass on
the show.
I know.
You never a dull moment. I mean, I could listen to her forever tell stories about what she's done, what she has seen. And I love the fact that she will not work for anybody that she feels is guilty or is doing harm, no matter the money, no matter what the money. And, you know, and to me, that's what we need, because I don't know, this is way, I mean, this doesn't go to our Constitution or anything, but if you have somebody really, really guilty, they shouldn't be able to get off just because they're able to afford a really good body language expert to pick a jury. You know, that just seems so wrong. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. It just seems really, really wrong. And if I were king, I could fix it, but I'm not. Okay, Kim, sir, my darling, are you ready, my friend? It's time for
yes.
The Web Sleuth. It's time for the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case. This is where each week Kimser brings us a case that is a cold case that we want to make hot again on websleuth.com. So, Kimster, the floor is yours.
Da, 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 da.
We need
this
a trumpet
week...
sound.
Yes. This week's cold case comes from Canada. Just was talking in the chat room with the Australian in there, and feeling a little international today. So this week's cold case comes from Canada and is about a girl who's been missing for 19 years this month. It is a very cold case, even on Web Sleuth. You'll see the thread doesn't have a lot there. So, you know, we need some help to revive this case. What information we do have is that on August 2nd, 1993, Lindsay Nichols was only 14 years of age and had temporarily moved into a foster home located on Royston Road in the Comox Valley, BC, Canada. During the morning of that day, she had a disagreement with her foster mother, and she walked out of the residence apparently to meet friends in Courtenay. She was last seen walking down the driveway towards Royston Road by her foster mother and then was never seen again. Lindsay had left all her belongings and treasures in her room, and her mother felt Lindsay had not planned to run away. Lindsay is described as Caucasian, 5'3", 110 to 115 pounds, green eyes, blonde hair colored with red henna. So if you were in that area and saw a girl matching that description, then please call law enforcement right away. It is possible Lindsay may have run away to Vancouver, British Columbia. She had previously lived in Delta, British Columbia, until her family moved to the Comox Valley in the summer of 1992. Lindsay had run away in April of 1993 and was located at a friend's residence in Delta at that time. So the possibility that Lindsay is still alive out there is also still very good. So
let's hope.
Please,
that would be wonderful.
Get the word out. Mm-hmm. This is one of those cold cases that would be wonderful to find her after all these years. So see if Lindsay looks familiar to you. Go to www.websleuth.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Lindsay and a link where you can click and go directly to her thread on websleuth.com. And if you aren't a member of Web Sleuth, you can join for free today.
Absolutely. Kimster, thank you so much. And Kimster, I want to bring up something. We have started a great relationship and are getting a lot of members with our friends over the ocean in Australia. And we are getting a lot of new members from Australia, and I just want to welcome them all. We've had members from Australia ever since we've started, but we're kind of getting an influx, and I think it's wonderful. It's like Australia is our second home. You know, I feel like if we went to Australia, if we took a trip there, we'd have so many people we could meet and just have fun. I've been to Australia, and let me tell you, it is a fabulous place to visit. First of all, they like Americans, and it's hard to go out of the country to find a place that likes Americans. Australia likes Americans, and they are so gracious and so wonderful and so fun. I can't say enough about the Australian people. So welcome to all of our new Australian members on websleuth.com. We certainly do appreciate it, haven't we? We've got some great new members, right, Kim?
Yes, we have some wonderful members, and I don't know if you know that I am also affiliated with Australia because I have two nieces that live in Sydney, Australia.
I did
and,
not know that.
As you know, we have a brand new mini, we call her mini moderator because she's mm-hmm. still, you know, learning the ropes, named Marley Wings, who is living in Australia. So not only do we have a lot of new members coming in from Australia, but we even have a moderator that can help them while you and I are asleep because
That's
they have
right.
a different you know. Yeah, in fact, I think it's already tomorrow over there today.
It
and
is.
It's also winter while we're sweltering in the summer. So we did need somebody that's actually there that can help them when we're sleeping and that sort of thing. And she's just wonderful. She's just really, really good. We're excited to have her on board.
She is wonderful. And we know those sneaky Australians, while we're sleeping here, they sneak in and post all that stuff on Web Sleuth. We have to can't believe it. No,
fun
and they're
stuff.
Wonderful.
Fun they're, stuff. They're very, very jovial people. It's been a lot
are.
Of fun knowing them.
I'm telling you, again, if you ever get a chance, you've got to go to Australia, absolutely. Well, Kimster, thank you so much for all your help, and sorry about the last 2 weeks taking it off. Just, you know, real life sometimes gets in the way of my other life, which is true crime and Trisha's True Crime Radio. Be sure and join us on websleuths.com. You can go to forumsforjustice.org as well, where we have a very lively discussion going about James Koehler's new book about the JonBenet Ramsey case, which is just making waves everywhere. I love it. And we'll be talking more about that book and the repercussions that the Team Ramsey might be feeling from the book as well. That's at forumsforjustice.org. We also have a discussion on JonBenet going on websleuths.com, among many, many other things. Kimster, thank you once again. We'll be back next week. I do appreciate everybody joining us tonight. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always, always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.